This is News and Notes. I'm Farai Chidea. Ernest Hemingway once said, "There is nothing to writing. All you do is sit down at a typewriter and bleed." If so, why would anyone want to do this? All this month, we've been looking at the Black literary tradition, and today we continue our series with a focus on becoming a writer. I'm joined now by three writers at different stages of their careers. Randall Keenan has written several books, including a new work of essays called The Fire This Time. Also, James Allen McPherson is the first African-American to win the Pulitzer Prize in fiction. His works include Hue and Cry, Elbow Room, and A Region Not Home. And Keisha Lynn is a former student of McPherson's and a recent graduate of the University of Iowa's Writers Workshop. Everybody, welcome.
Hi.
Hello.
So let's start with this quote from Hemingway. And I'm going to go to you, James. Is this really about bleeding your heart out? Is that what it takes to be a writer?
Keisha and I were just talking about courage. She handed me a book called The Courage to Write, How Writers Transcend Fear. I think it's fear more than bleeding that causes you to write, because it prods. It's something you have to overcome. Now, that may be bleeding, I don't know, but it's transcendence of fear, I think.
So when you think about fear, what does it mean to you?
We were talking about a protege of mine, Ralph Ellison, just now, and I read an article about him and his new book in the Washington Post magazine about two or three weeks ago. And it interests me because I think Ellison did fear. He did fear that he was not going to beat the Ralph Ellison Invisible Man. I think that is a reality. You don't bleed, you just tremble, I think.
Keisha, how does this relate to your experience? Tell us also about how and when you came to writing in your life.
Well, I was one of those people who got bit at an early age. I had a teacher in third grade in Cleveland Heights, Ohio, who used to give us creative writing exercises. And it was around the same time I had also discovered Star Trek, the original one. And so I was already in that grand imaginative state where I felt anything could be possible. And then to be able to make things up, it was really just a great fit for me, tied to that also being the fact this is kind of a different take on fear, that I wasn't exactly the most popular kid in school. I was kind of an outsider. I was a bit of a nerd. And many people deal with that in different ways. I chose to withdraw into fiction, and I'm still doing it. That's how I identified with writing and being a writer very early as a very young child.
But you made some decisions after having other paths in your life. Is that correct? You worked for many years in fields that were not literary.
I did. I actually entered college as an engineering major, and then I had what I call my rebel moment and said, I'm going to be a writer, so I changed my major to English. But then once I graduated and was faced with a big, bad, scary world, I found myself diverted into technical writing. And I worked in information technology for 17 years. Much of that time was spent as a technical writer and editor, but I also did some other things. And all the while, I was writing, but I wasn't writing to the level that I really wanted to write at. And I finally made a decision a few years ago that I wanted to be serious about my writing. And for that meant for me to leave information technology and to go back to school and to study writing and to really get serious about it. So that's why I'm here.
So, Randall, you are somewhat different in that you're writing in the nonfiction mode as opposed to the fiction mode. Do you think there's any difference, or is the fear and trembling still the same when you have to sit down at the clickety-clack of the computer keyboard?
Well, actually, I do both. I write my first two books were fiction, and I've been writing more nonfiction recently. But to answer your question, I think that there is an element of fear. I also think that fear, different sorts, fear that you want to represent all the facts and get things right as lined up one-to-one correspondence with reality. And also if you're dealing with people, that you don't misrepresent them. But I also wanted to chime in that I think there's also an element of joy involved too. I actually started, much as the way Keisha mentioned, being very interested in science fiction. I was a physics major when I was in undergraduate, and I was just messing around with science fiction. And part of that was an element of joy that you know, I think begins to recede as you take it more seriously. But there's still a good part of that left in it.
Now, I want to ask each of you to give me a sense of the role of teacher and student. Some people would argue that good writing can't be taught. Maybe it can be inspired or coached. And James, what do you think about that? You have been someone who I'm sure has inspired many people. Do you think that good writing can be taught?
I just came out of a meeting of all the people in the writer's workshop. We welcomed the new students. And that issue was raised. It can be inspired. You can teach technical things, but the substance has to come from the individual. And I think all you can do is encourage the writer to impose order on that substance. The substance is his. The order is his, but his, that to use in a way that can be communicated to others. That's my sense about it. I know that the two students were very enthusiastic. They're glad to be here. I look forward to reading and work. But what was stressed was that this is a community that tend to affirm each other in positive ways. And that's what makes Iowa unique.
Yeah, the Iowa Writers' Workshops are legendary in the writing world as places where people go to become the next whatever, the next person published in The New Yorker, the next person to win a Pulitzer. Keisha, is that a lot of pressure for you to be in that environment?
You know, when I decided to get my MFA, I was 38, and I said, you know what, I'm going to apply to all the top programs. What do I have to lose if I don't get in? And apparently a lot of people apply for MFAs who don't get in the first time, and then they do it again. And I applied to Iowa because of its reputation and because I honestly didn't think I'd get in. And I got in, and I said, this is what I asked for, which was I wanted to step up my game. And where better to do that than at Iowa, where you have Jim McPherson, you have Marilyn Robinson, and all these great teachers, and mainly, again, as Jim said, the great community of writers. These are the people I learned from, not just the teachers, but also the students, because we were all writers together, and it's exactly what I asked for.
Now, Randall, you teach at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill, but I'm sure that you have studied at the feet not just of people who taught you directly, but also inspiration. So James Baldwin once said, the responsibility of a writer is to excavate the experience of the people who produced him. And your book, The Fire This Time, plays off his classic, The Fire Next Time. So what do you think he means by excavating experiences? And is that what you do in part?
Yes, I think that almost any writing that is interesting comes out of a culture in crisis. And if you know anything about history, almost every culture is at crisis at any given point of time. And I think that, you know, Baldwin, who was a huge inspiration to me, came about as a writer at a time when, you know, we can look back and see all the things that were happening in the civil rights movement. He grew up in a time in Harlem just before the war, World War II, that was deeply tumultuous. So I think any culture can give a writer a lot of wonderful raw material to deal with. And beyond, one step beyond that is our humanity, which every writer deals with.
Humanity. James, what does that mean to you? What do you try to convey through your work that is, and I guess what I would ask you, and this gets asked very often of Black writers, and I'll just step up to that plate, do you write about an African-American experience or a universal experience? Do you write for an African-American audience or a universal audience? Or do these thought processes not enter into how you write?
They don't enter into how I write. I try to write something that's human, negative and positive. And I don't put a racial category on it, around it, although most of my characters are Black. I look at the interaction between individuals from many ethnic groups, not always in terms of racial tension, but in terms of cooperation, common goals, common interest. I try to write, Al Murray gave me this phrase. Murray was Ellison's best friend. He said, you want to become an omni-American, a person who has a sense of all levels of society and all groups within that society. And so you can find the commonalities, the things that they share, the assumptions they share in common. And so that goes beyond race. It goes beyond race. And that's what I try to focus on.
Randall, from the perspective of the marketplace, because folks got to eat, do you think about who your book is targeting, not just in a racial sense, but more in the sense of, gosh, am I going to hit the mark? There are people who never found an audience while they were living, and then years later after their death, they're championed. But, you know, I know that you've got bills to pay if you're like most of us. How do you balance that aspect?
You don't. I think that there are, especially for black writers in the last 15 years, a viable commercial black literature or market or what do you want to call it. But I think the kind of writing that I've always been attracted to, commercial success is not guaranteed, not to be wished for. It's a fluke. And I think that I think Philip Roth said that you have about 3,000 serious writers in America. You can probably count on reaching that. Anything beyond that is gravy. And I think that the main goal is to do the work well. Get your, as one of my mentors used to say, take your rewards from the page, and just be happy that you can go forward. I mean, I don't mean to sound pessimistic or cynical about the world of letters, but I think that any writer who wants to stick with it and become good at it can't expect financial rewards.
Keisha, is this something that you've made peace with, or do you think he's wrong, or how do you feel about that?
Peace? Are you kidding? You remember, I was working in IT, okay? And now I am here, you know, having recently graduated from the Writers' Workshop, currently working for another writing program on the university, making probably about a quarter of what I used to make. I am in this for the love of writing. I am in it because it is something people have dreams, and some dreams are just really hard to let go of. And again, I identified as a writer from a very young age, so this is one of those things. I reached a point in my life where I said, I need to do this regardless. And yeah, I worry about the bills, but right now I'm really focused on trying to synthesize everything I've learned in the 2 years at the workshop and really apply it to my writing.
James, we only have time for one snippet of wisdom from you, but what's something that you tell your students to inspire them when they're down?
I talk about the blues, the tragic and the comic interacting. I talk about how the comic can transcend the tragic. The Greeks did that with comedy. Tragedy during the day and comedies at night. The blues does that. I think that you've got to sort of face, first of all, the thing that's causing that mood, and then you've got to try to find ways to transcend it.
Well, I'm going to have to end it there. James Allen McPherson, Randall Keenan, and Keisha Lynn, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.